Chapter 2. The exhilaration of the wind and the rush of excitement into the pit of Ethan's stomach as Maitre went into a sharp, spiralling descent was unbelievable. Not even jumping from an airplane could compare with this feeling. But, much as he was relishing each moment of the flight, he knew Maitre was not equally thrilled to be bearing him as a burden. Dragons were not horses. She had made this point quite clearly from the onset. However, time was a factor, and what he must accomplish could not be delayed. Queen Barathis might have said she was willing to rise up against Shinzan, but her allegiance was not yet assured. None of her forces had been mustered, and she had made no public declaration supporting the dwarves and elves. King Yularian had told him that she could be a difficult woman, so likely she first wanted to ensure her nation's status, as well as her own, once the war was won. It was widely assumed that with the return of the mages, the kings and queens of Lumnia would return to their vassal-like positions, governing according to the wishes of Lord Dragonvane. This sentiment was held even among the elves and dwarves, though not by King Halvar and Kira. For this, he was grateful. He had no intention of assuming the mantle of leadership, and he certainly had no desire to return the world to the way it had been in Martok's time. But for now, he had to show strength and resolve. He needed to assure the Queen that she was not casting her lot in with a doomed cause, and for this he would need to use much of the political savvy he possessed, thanks to Martok's memories. Below him, the courtyard of the palace was filled with stunned onlookers, their jaws slack and fingers pointing skyward at what to their minds must have been a legend made reality. The surrounding city of Jar Malefica was in utter chaos. People were scurrying about with a combination of terror and excitement, their condition certainly exacerbated by the number of low passes Maitre had made before climbing above the clouds in order to make a more dramatic entrance. The packed space below left no room for the landing. If they didn't move, Maitre would certainly crush several people. Not the introduction Ethan would prefer. Fortunately, as they came level to the curtain wall, which was lined with dozens of archers, their bows trained directly on both him and his mount, the crowd began shifting back to make room. Ethan searched for the Queen, but the doors leading into the palace remained firmly shut. It was a common measure for a monarch who would not want to appear overly eager. Even so, Ethan was willing to wager that she was looking on from one of the many narrow windows lining the palace facade. The chance to lay eyes on a dragon would be too much for almost anyone to resist. Maitre landed heavily on the slate yard, arching her neck and letting out a mighty roar. Ethan had to suppress a laugh. She was showing off. And to great effect. Gasps and screams rippled through the crowd in one continuous wave as the panicking people struggled to back off and distance themselves even further from the terrifying new arrivals. He could see that those at the rear were being forced against the wall and were in severe danger of being crushed. The old Ethan would have been merely concerned for their safety. But now he could also view it as an opportunity. Spreading his arms, he focused his mind. A globe of pure white light appeared just above Maitre's head. Unnecessary glamour, to be sure, but this was as much to do with presentation as substance. Of course, if he was wrong and Queen Barathis was not watching, it would all be for nothing.
Bartilio Vamonza!
His voice boomed out, shaking the very ground. The light flashed with blinding intensity, further terrifying the assembly. For the people at the rear, however, it was a life-saving spell. Speedily, yet smoothly, they were lifted above the increasing weight of those in front. As they dangled helplessly but safely a few feet above their fellow citizens, Ethan slid from Maitre's back. Keeping his voice magically enhanced, he thundered,
"If you have no business here, leave now."
Though his tone bore no anger, it nonetheless carried extreme authority. The people needed no second bidding. Immediately, they began racing toward the open portcullis, many stumbling and falling in their eagerness to get away, only to be lifted to safety by Ethan's magic just in time to avoid being trampled to death. Once all those still on their feet had made good their escape, he allowed the rest to descend and hurry off in the same direction. The guards along the wall, awestruck by what they had witnessed, were no longer aiming their bows. But the chime of a bell from high above, within one of the tall spires, brought them back into the moment. The creak of bowstrings issued forth, drawn by scores of unsteady hands. Ethan turned to Maitre and gave a quick nod. After snorting a blast of hot air, she leapt skyward, her massive wings pounding loudly until in no time she was a mere speck against the blue sky.
"Lower your bows,"
ordered a voice from the palace's large double doors. Atop the steps there stood an elderly man clad in blue and gold robes. With a thin silver rod, capped with a blue crystal in his right hand, his severe expression and piercing grey eyes drilled directly into Ethan. After holding this gaze for several seconds, without another word, he made a slow turn and disappeared inside. No longer threatened by the bowmen, Ethan started toward the palace, on the way taking in the intricate friezes and colourful banners decorating its façade. Along the bottom edge, spanning the entire breadth, were evenly spaced statues of horses, carved from a rich blue stone and polished to a mirror shine. Altheona was renowned for its high-quality horseflesh, for countless years providing half of Lumnia, including the Imperial Army, with some of the most magnificent steeds ever born. Their speed and endurance was legendary. Once inside, he paused to take stock of his surroundings. The foyer was certainly impressive. From the high ceiling hung six magnificent crystal chandeliers. The floor and walls were of polished white marble that was veined with silver and gold. More statues of horses lined either side, while a great fountain served as a particularly eye-catching centerpiece. The echo of the water was almost musical. This initial sighting of the palace's interior was clearly meant to display the wealth and power of the queen to its utmost. Ethan could easily imagine a foreign noble being both impressed and intimidated. Three archways were positioned between the statues, both to his left and right, while a much larger archway lay directly ahead. The old man was waiting beneath this, an impatient expression on his face. With a brisk movement of his hand, he gestured for Ethan to follow and moved on. Ethan knew better than to hurry. Martok's experience told him this. One must never appear overly anxious in situations when you have come to appeal for help. Behave as if you are completely unconcerned and have all the time you need. Be relaxed and in control. And most of all, never allow people to read what is in your heart by looking at your face. He concentrated on his expression, forcing it to take on an almost arrogant appearance. Perhaps not the best way to come across, but he had only Martok's knowledge to work with, and his ancestor had frequently met with many powerful leaders in his time. Personally, he had experienced very few meetings of this sort before. It was much like having read countless volumes on politics and decorum, but without having any of the practical experience to go along with it. He passed through the archway and continued following the old man through a series of rooms and corridors. The palace was vast, every bit as large as King Eularion's. Another common tactic. If you have it to display, show your wealth to your opponent long before you meet. And that is what he and the queen were at the moment. Opponents. This was being made perfectly clear. Ethan sighed inwardly. He hated politics as much as Martok had. Maybe even more so. Eventually, he was shown into a small parlour. The furnishings were elegant and, in Ethan's opinion, feminine. The pastel chairs and rugs were arranged in such a way that the occupants could easily converse with one another, regardless of where they were seated. But in this instance, there were no other occupants. The absence of the queen was glaring.
"Her Highness commands that you wait here until summoned," the man instructed him.
Ethan sniffed.
"Then you shall fetch me refreshment while I wait."
He punctuated this with a sharp snap of his fingers. The man stiffened.
"I will have you know that I am Her Majesty's—"
Ethan's eyes glowed bright red, and his features hardened into a mask of absolute authority.
I do not care in the slightest who you are. If I am to be kept waiting, I will have refreshment. Am I understood?
The man jumped sharply back, eyes wide and mouth agape.
I beg your pardon. I will see to it at once.
Ethan released the magic and allowed his face to return to a state of impassive arrogance. My lord, he said.
I beg your pardon?
You will address me as my lord, or Lord Dragonvane.
The man bowed awkwardly, his hands trembling as he rubbed them together.
Yes, yes, my lord, I do apologize.
Taking a seat, Ethan waved a dismissive hand. The man did not hesitate, spinning quickly on his heels and very nearly stumbling into a chair before exiting the room. Ethan sighed heavily. He did not enjoy behaving in this arrogant manner. But, given the situation, it was required. He waited patiently until a servant boy entered, bearing a tray of fruits and bread, along with a bottle of wine and a crystal goblet. The lad could not bring himself to look Ethan in the eye, clearly afraid to be in the same room as their awe-inspiring visitor. Ethan wanted to reassure him that there was nothing to fear, though he knew to do so might possibly work against him. Every move he made and every word he spoke would surely be reported back to the Queen. He pretended not to notice the servant's activity. He wasn't really hungry or thirsty anyway. But again, every action served a purpose. Once the boy was gone, he sat at a small glass table to examine the fare. With prudence dictating that he take care, he cast a small spell to check for anything that might have been added to the food or wine. Though he didn't expect to find anything, to his surprise he discovered that the wine had indeed been tampered with. A mild sedative had been mixed into the bottle. Though not fatal, it would certainly have made him drowsy and lethargic. Ethan allowed a slight smile to creep to his lips. Clever. With a wave of his hand, he purified the wine and began his meal. No sooner had he finished when the door opened. This time it was the elderly man returning. After giving a formal bow, his eyes darted to the half-empty wine bottle.
The Queen will receive you now, my lord.
With a show of great nonchalance, Ethan leaned back in his chair, clasping his hands behind his head.
Tell Her Highness that I will be along shortly. I need to digest my food.
The man furrowed his brow.
My lord, may I suggest you come with me now? The Queen does not like to be kept waiting.
Ethan gave him a stern, sideways look.
I do not like it either. But as I was kept waiting, I will see the Queen when I am good and ready.
He flicked his wrist.
Run along.
Obviously unwilling to debate the matter any further with such a powerful mage, the servant did as instructed. Ethan thought back on the first time he had met with King Halvar. He had been terrified and in no small measure intimidated by the prospect of meeting an actual king. But had he possessed the knowledge that was now a part of him, he would have easily seen through the dwarf monarch's tactics. He would have even likely foreseen his attempts on his life as well. Enhancing his hearing, he listened for the old servant to return. He shouldn't overplay his hand. Putting the Queen off balance was one thing. To infuriate her beyond measure was an altogether different matter. According to King Eularion, she was not the type to show her emotions easily, though, when pressed too far, it was said that her anger could easily match that of a drunken soldier. The approaching footsteps told him that it was time. Rising from his chair, he smoothed down his clothing. He had deliberately chosen attire that was far from befitting a noble, just a simple cotton shirt and pants. By contrast, the elegant blade that Jonas had passed on to him spoke clearly of wealth and power. This incongruous mix would serve to further confuse the Queen's perceptions. He had already started toward the door when it opened. The servant jumped back a pace, scurrying out of the way as Ethan strode straight past him. Quickly regaining his composure, he hurried along until he was in the lead. Ethan followed him through another series of chambers and corridors before finally reaching the throne room. He thought this unusually small, no more than 50 feet square. The walls were draped with tapestries and ornate weapons, and the domed ceiling was painted with images of the 5 great kingdoms. Positioned in the very center of these was a crimson raven, the sigil of the empire. Though a thick black line had been painted directly across this, as if to discount its importance. Ethan smiled inwardly. That must have taken courage. The throne was of black stone inlaid with gold and etched with intricate letterings in the ancient language of the dwarves. Clearly it was they who had crafted it, probably as a gift to the reigning monarch of ancient past. Sitting proudly upon it now was Queen Berathys. Ethan was immediately struck by both her youth and beauty. Her raven hair was woven into thin braids, with white and silver threads interlacing each one. These were all held neatly in place by a thin circlet with a single diamond at its centre, resting on her brow. Her flowing gown of white satin and violet lace hung perfectly from her slender shoulders, and her delicate features looked set and resolute. In spite of her youthful appearance, she truly exuded strength and confidence. On either side of her was a guard, clad in golden armor and carrying a long spear. Their gazes were fixed straight ahead, and they remained absolutely motionless, as if crafted from stone. As Ethan approached the throne, the queen's dark eyes glared at him.
"You dare to keep me waiting in my own home?"
Her voice was melodic and richly feminine. He stopped and bowed.
"I regret that I was in need of refreshment after my journey, Your Highness. I'm sure you would not want to receive a parched and hungry guest, particularly considering that this is our first encounter. What I want is to be treated with the respect I have both earned and deserve," she shot back, without a moment's hesitation.
Ethan was a touch surprised by this display of irritation so early on. It was contrary to the measured and controlled woman that had been described to him. Was it possible that a mage's presence within her palace had shaken her? Relaxing his posture, he smiled.
"You are right, of course, Your Highness. I should have come right away."
Her expression did not change, though Ethan could see in her eyes that his slight capitulation had met with approval.
"Let us not mince words, Lord Dragonvane," she said. "You have already been told of my position by King Eularion. I have no intention of supporting a cause, only to have my country kneel to a new emperor once the old one has been removed."
"And you think I intend to be this new emperor? Is that it?"
"Do you not? I am not so foolish as to believe that the return of the mages will not come at great cost. And do not bother lying. I know there are others."
"I have no intention of lying, and I am aware that the prospect of a return to the old ways would frighten many people. But you must believe me when I say that I do not hold any desire for a throne, nor do the other mages. I would see a new age rise from our victory, one where all people of every race can thrive and live in safety."
"And will we be victorious? Do you truly have the power to cast down the Emperor?"
Ethan considered his next words carefully.
"No, not alone, and perhaps not even with all the armies of Lumnia behind me. I have already fought Chinzan once, and was unable to destroy him. There is no guarantee that I will fare any better when I face him again."
The queen frowned.
"You tell me this, and expect me to follow you? Do you think me a fool?"
"Of course not," he replied evenly. "But as you have already done more than enough to incur Shinzan's wrath, you would seem to have little choice in the matter." Queen Berathys' eyes narrowed.
"Do not presume to know my mind. You cannot fathom the choices I make. If it will save my people, I will take full responsibility. And yes, I know that it would mean death at the hands of the Emperor. but I will recant my support this instant and submit myself to him before I will allow my people to suffer."
Ethan nodded respectfully.
"I understand your commitment, and I admire your willingness to lay down your life for your people, but doing so will not save them. This world is dying, and it is Shinzan who is killing it."
"Yes," she said, rolling her eyes. "King Yularian has already explained this to me. Shinzan is destroying some invisible spirit, or some such tripe as that."
Ethan battled to contain the exasperation in his voice.
"Surely you can see it. The desert to the east is expanding, bringing famine and disease like never before. Just look around you. I do not believe you are blind to this."
"Mind your tongue, mage," she snapped. "I see things quite clearly. And I will not be bullied as you bullied my chamberlain. I do not fear you as he does."
The two locked eyes for a lengthy and tense moment. She was afraid. That much was without doubt. But of what? Logic said that she feared being on the losing side of the war. But a tiny voice in the back of his mind told him that it was something else.
"My intent is not to bully," he responded. "So, perhaps you should simply tell me what it is you want."
"If you want things put simply, I can accommodate you."
She rose gracefully from her throne and stepped onto the small dais on which it was situated.
"I will fight with you, Lord Dragonvane. I will muster my armies and go to war as you desire. But I require one thing in return. For you to be my husband."
Ethan was utterly dumbstruck. For several seconds, he simply stood there with his mouth hanging slightly open, unable to think of what to say. The queen let out a soft laugh.
"I see the prospect has not crossed your mind. Am I so repulsive to you?"
"No,"
he finally managed to blurt out. He did his best to regain his composure.
"What I mean to say is that you are indeed lovely, Your Highness, but I am promised to another."
"Yes, I know. King Yularian's daughter. But I am afraid that is my price, and it is not negotiable."
"Please, Your Highness, you must listen to reason."
She stiffened her back.
"I must do nothing. I will not stand by while Ralmaria overshadows my realm once you ascend to the throne."
"I swear that I have no intention of ascending to anything," he said.
His mind raced for the right words.
"If you wish, I will publicly renounce any claim that I might have."
The queen laughed.
"And what good would that do? Should you change your mind, who would challenge you? I suppose you could use your magic on me. If the legends are true, you might try to manipulate my mind. But I must warn you."
She reached up and tapped the circlet on her brow.
"This has been in my family for 1,000 years. It is reputed to protect the wearer from any such devilish spells."
Ethan was indeed tempted to use magic. Martok would not have hesitated. But he was not Martok.
"Such magic exists, Your Highness," he admitted. "But I will not use it. However, I am begging you to reconsider. I cannot and will not love you."
With splendid grace, she stepped down from the dais.
"I do not require your love, but the heir to Altheona will be from your seed, and I will not bear a bastard."
The two guards and the old servant flanked her instantly as she crossed the room toward the doors, not pausing even for an instant as she passed the still stunned Ethan.
"I will give you until morning to decide," she said,
before exiting the chamber. Ethan remained standing motionless for more than a minute before turning to leave. Immediately outside, a young woman waited nervously.
"Your room has been prepared, Lord Dragonvane," she said meekly. "Proper attire will be provided for tonight's banquet." Anger began to swell inside him. "I will not be attending," he snapped. He allowed himself to be led to a lavish palace apartment. Not that he was taking any notice of the elegant decor or painstaking manner in which each piece of furniture had been crafted. All he could think about was Cat. Queen Barathis had the advantage, and she knew it. He headed straight into the bedroom and plopped face down on the bed, not bothering to disrobe. He cursed himself for being a fool. He should have seen this coming. Her reasons were all too obvious, and all too logical. With a powerful mage as her husband, no one would dare to challenge her rule or the rule of her offspring. His own relationships with both the dwarves and the elves would all but guarantee that the trade and riches that came about because of these links would be centered in Altheona. This move would make her the most powerful ruler in Lumnia, even if he refused to take any active role in matters of royalty. Cold and calculating. And he was a moron for coming here alone. Though, had Cat been present, she might well have reacted by roasting the queen right there on the spot. The very thought of the woman's proposal almost made him laugh out loud. But the seriousness of the situation quickly banished any feelings of amusement. A short time later, there came a light rap at the door. Ethan rolled over and moaned. He had no intention of attending any bloody banquet. So whoever was there could just go away. But they did not take the hint. Soon the knock became louder and more urgent. Finally, exasperated, Ethan slid from the bed and crossed over to the door. As expected, it was a servant girl bearing a bundle of his evening's attire. "I told the other girl I will not be attending," he snapped. A second later, seeing the fear his forceful tone had elicited in the servant, he instantly regretted using it. She had done nothing wrong, and he certainly did not enjoy frightening people. Forcing a smile, he lightened his tone. "I'm sorry, miss. Please tell Her Highness that I am weary from my journey, and that we shall speak in the morning." The girl curtsied and left without a word. Ethan returned to the bedroom, this time stripping off his clothes before lying down. For another hour, he mulled the situation over in his mind. But in the end, he could see only two ways of getting what he sought. Agree to marry the queen, or... The second choice was nagging at the back of his mind. It was the one Martok would have chosen. And it might be the easy path to achieve what he wanted. But for all his power and intelligence, Martok had made several diplomatic blunders. In any case, there was absolutely no guarantee that the Queen's army would choose to join in with his fight against Shinzan should she die, even if it was made to appear that she had been slain by an imperial hand. With no clearly defined heir to her throne, the most likely outcome would be chaos, as several rival claimants struggled for ascendancy. No, he would not act rashly. He could not even consider killing Queen Barathis. This needed to be done his way, not Martok's. There must be another solution he had yet to consider. After a time, he could feel sleep coming. He sat up in bed and closed his eyes. Weaving wards could sometimes be challenging, though this one was simple. After muttering a few words, he looked around the room. The slight glow of magic penetrating the room was barely visible. In fact, he doubted if anyone other than a mage would be able to perceive it at all. It spread steadily throughout the palace until reaching the curtain wall. Satisfied, Ethan lay down and allowed himself to drift. Maybe something in his dreams would provide a solution to his problem. Ethan found himself standing alone in a sea of dunes. In the far distance, the spires of Shinzan's palace beckoned. He could feel himself being inexorably drawn to his foe and his fate. But there was no fear, only the bitter reality of what he knew he had to do. "Why do you still cling to hope?" A gentle voice descended upon him like a spring rain, and the palace became obscured by a thin mist. Lumnia. She was speaking to him through his dreams. I don't understand. You must let go.
Are you saying I will lose? He demanded.
That all this is for nothing? You already know where victory is found, and you know how this must end.
Ethan dropped to his knees and lowered his head. He did know. He had always known.
Is there no other way? There are always choices, the voice replied. But for you, there is only one that will save the people you love. Only one way to save them, and me.
Ethan felt utterly defeated. Lumnia's words cut him more deeply than the sharpest blade. There had always been only one path. He understood this now. He pictured Kat in his mind. He would save her. But at the cost of his own life. For them, there was no future. No hope. He had to find a way to accept this. That none of his dreams for a life with her would come true. There was only now. This briefest of moments. And then, there would be nothing.